Here on a Thursday morning, J.R. Zimmer, Bund is in for a hammer, spinning the tunes. The O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, coming up in just a second. Six more NHL exhibition games last night. Final three will go today. Then tomorrow will be a final practice day, and then everything kicks off for real beginning on Saturday with five games starting at a high noon. And, well, if and Winnipeg and Calgary end in regulation time, 10:30 starts at 1 o'clock in the morning, so you're looking at 13 straight hours of hockey coming up on Saturday. You're over-under, Zimmer, on the number of hours committed to watching hockey on Saturday of the 13 potential hours.
Well, I'll watch the 8 o'clock game, so if that's giving me 2.5,
yep.
And I'll watch a couple hours. I'll go 4.5.
You're a liar.
I'm going less, more?
You're going more than that. You
really?
Know you're going to sit down mid-afternoon, you're going to get in from outside, and you're going to go, hey, you know what, I'll just sit down, I'll turn it on here for 5 minutes, and then you'll be glued. You'll be there for the rest of the day.
Well, we'll see.
You'll be ordering in, dropping a couple of bottles of Pinot.
Yeah, but you can't be watching those round-robin exhibition games. Who the hell wants to watch that?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you certainly don't want to be watching Florida and the Islanders. That's must-miss television.
Yeah, that is actually. That won't be very good.
All right, Columbus-Toronto will kick off on Sunday night for Game 1 to talk about that series and all of the upcoming NHL playoffs. We welcome to the show from TSN 1050 in Toronto, former NHLer, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. How you doing this morning, O-Dog?
How you doing, guys? I'm rather pumped up from that music coming in. I don't know who the hell that was. Was that Motley Crue?
Yeah, it was Motley Crue. Looks like Kill.
Yeah, that got me fired up. I was kind of in a bit of a daze, but now I'm ready to rock.
Were you going back to almost warm up and looking at your flow in the mirror there just to see how you're looking before you come out?
Yeah, I mean, I did check the flow quite a bit, but I don't ever remember that tune playing in warm up. That's really a blast from the past, that one.
There you go. We wanted to take you back to make sure you're comfortable as you join the show. How was the golf game yesterday, by the way?
It was solid. I'm playing pretty well. I've had some vacation time here, and I got a lot of rounds in. I'm hitting it pretty good. I'm just not. I just have high expectations. I'm just not scoring. I just want one round that's real low, and then I can take some average stuff. But it just seems to all kind of average.
Yeah. Is losing to Kyle Dubas and Jerry D put a little dent in the confidence?
More James Duffy's confidence, actually. I played not bad that day, and it all came down to one shot for him. He hit this hybrid from, 205 yards that just went sideways, which is, it's like hitting a shank in golf. The shank's ultimately not that bad, but it's every shot after that, you're thinking about the shank, and he was mentally destroyed after that, and he couldn't get the ball airborne. He was just rattled, and I don't know, I don't want to single him out, but he cost the team the match. We were five up, five shots better than them on 11. And even Jerry told me after, he's like, I was just waiting for Duffy. Because in the alternate shot, amateur golfers, regardless of your capabilities, they could go sideways alternate shot very quickly. And it did. And we just couldn't get it back on track. I don't know, but I do put the blame on him. There's no question.
Nice, nice. I love that. Blame the teammates. All right. Well, good thing you're all getting back to the desk now. Now, what are you working television-wise during the playoffs?
Just covering. We got a preview show Friday night, and then just basically covering the Leafs and their series against Columbus. Basically doing SportsCenter hits. So some of it's from home, some of it's in studio. It's just good, guys. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that was a grind. 2 or 3 months with no sports on TV, getting plowing through some shows with really nothing going on. So I was, I talked to Brian Hayes yesterday on our show, and he was, hoping for crowd noise or different. I was like, I'm just happy to watch a Major League Baseball player, an NHL hockey player, an NBA. I'm just happy to watch live sports. I don't care about the crowd. I could have the volume right down. I did last night. My wife was insisted that HGTV, I got three TVs, she insisted that HGTV stayed on the big one, and I had two sports games on top of it, and I watched with no volume, very happily. So
nice.
I'm just glad it's all back on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all are. So thoughts on this Columbus-Toronto series? And we won't talk too much about the game on Tuesday between the Leafs and Habs, but what are your expectations of what we're going to see starting Sunday?
I don't know. Torts has got kind of a bit of a Belichick feel to him, where he's got so much time to sit and prepare for a team. He's going to be ready. He's going to have his team ready. So I think for the Maple Leafs, and there's been a lot of talk in Toronto where it's like do or die for this group. And I know, I guess with the salary cap and the way their salaries are structured, they do have to make some hay, I would guess, in the next couple of years. But I don't really consider it a do or die situation. But you talk about this young team, and there's two elements to it. When the Chicago Blackhawks, that young group, won three Stanley Cups rather quickly. And then there's the other side of it, which is Washington, which took Ovi, I think, 13 years to win the Cup. So I think Toronto's got to be ready to play. They have to kind of, as Ray Ferraro says, put their big boy pants on and be ready to compete and really ready to grind. Because regardless, I think you would have to give the edge to Toronto with talent level and elite goal scoring and playmaking. But they're going to work, man. You've seen it all year with the injuries they've had and the way they work and the way they grind. So if Toronto's not ready for that competition element of this play-in series, they're going to have a difficult time. It's the old saying, if skill doesn't work, work's going to win. So they've got the talent, but they've got to, you know, try to take the next step here. And they've talked about their defensive play, and they got to make improvements. But they got to play well. They have to have their big boys step up, but they really have to compete to have a chance. And I think they're the favorite against Columbus, but they better be ready to work.
And to that, Jeff, do you think realistically watching this team the entire year that they have the personnel and that they can switch the mentality to actually play defense?
That remains to be seen. That's a great question, Simmer. I think that, you know, I asked Sheldon Keefe the other day. I just said, you know, at the NHL level, like, if a guy needs to be told where to stand and where to go, I think he's in trouble. It should be kind of a known thing where how to play defense. But it's just an all-around mindset and an attitude where, you know, if he got the puck, like William Nylander the other night against Montreal, it was on the boards. He just didn't work hard enough and didn't get it out, and ultimately it ended up back in the net. So it's not necessarily, I think, forwards and Maple Leaf fans love to put it on the D-core, saying they're just not good enough, they're not quick enough to get to the puck, they're not physical enough. But it was a simple play where if Nylander got the puck out at the blue line, then they don't have to deal with the nonsense in front of their net, and everybody looks bad because they were kind of going on transition and they didn't have a man. And it's just, but if Nylander gets that puck out, so it's just simple fundamental stuff. You got to work, get back there. And they're so talented that if they just get back there and do the work, they're going to have a puck a whole lot more. So it's a really big thing, because since I've started working at TSN, we're going on 7 or 8 years now, I've been saying the same thing. Even with Kessel and that group, they're talented. They can score goals, but can they defend? It's been the same storyline since I've started working at TSN, which is creeping up on a long time. So it's something they got to figure out.
Talking to Jeff O'Neill, the O-Dog. So if you're Sheldon Keefe, are you dressing Nick Robertson in the first game, or are you going with more size and grit in Freddie Gauthier?
I'm putting Nick Robertson in the lineup. If they're committed to the idea of speed and skill and playmaking and puck possession and having it, then he's a guy I think that can possibly score a big goal and be a difference maker. Freddie Gauthier, I love the guy. He's a fantastic character guy in the locker room. But ultimately, when you talk about what's actually being done on the ice, he's a big body that can kill penalties, maybe take a face-off, but there's not a ton being accomplished there. If he had a mean streak and he ran people over and just had that kind of mentality, that's a different beast. But it's just, I'm putting Nick Robertson in the lineup. There's, you know, he's a young kid, and people might say, you know, you got to let him sit and wait his turn. But if you're good enough, you're good enough. And I think he's good enough, and he had an assist, and he almost scored a goal the other night, and I only think he's going to get better from here on in.
I listened to your show the other day, or watched actually, and there was a comment about Freddie Anderson, and I thought you guys mentioned maybe a little heavy, a little conditioning. I watched that game that night. I thought he looked really flat-footed, not very comfortable in the net. Kind of thoughts on what you've heard and what you've seen so far?
Well, there was talk of Freddie Anderson in the inner squad games where he was, you know, pucks were going in, but I thought he looked good against Montreal. I haven't heard the talk of conditioning or any of that here. Maybe I haven't been reading the paper properly, but I think he's, you know, for him to go into that game, obviously there's pressure on him. He's a guy that hasn't really got the job done in the playoffs, and goaltending is such a key element. So he looked good the other night, and I think he's going to be confident going into the series against Columbus. But as far as the conditioning, I haven't heard that similar.
If he doesn't get it done this playoff, if they fall to Columbus, or even in round one of the playoffs, whoever they choose, I think he's got, a year or two left on his contract. Do you think Toronto's going to start looking somewhere else for a goalie or what?
I think if they don't get it done and they ultimately end up losing to Columbus, I think, I don't know if the idea of blowing it up is there. I said, I mean, they're a young group. They do have to take a step, but if it doesn't happen, maybe there's a tweak. Maybe there's an adjustment. clearly think Toronto would be hoping the salary cap went up a significant amount. I don't think that's going to be the case. So there might be a tinkering, or somebody has to move on out and just change the dynamic. But for Freddie Anderson, I think that, you know, he's, if you're going to invest, and who knows what money's going to be available for the Morgan Riley's coming up, Freddie Anderson's coming up. So I think they got to make some hay here, and he's definitely a guy that's got to get done for Toronto.
Do you look more importantly with Barry and CeCe and guys like that, O-Dog, that you'd probably see a reshape in the defense if they don't go very well, even regardless that both walk out the door based on the salary cap?
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, Simmer, I've been talking about the D-core and their ability to get back and move the puck and be physical back there and just simply defend. I mean, I don't expect everyone to be a Norris Trophy candidate back there. There's not Nick Lidstrom's around, but just the ability to go back there and not look lost in your own end is so important. It's just, you got to, with the talent, it's a pretty simple job back there. Obviously, Morgan Riley's a special player. Barry can be effective. He's a puck-moving guy, but just go back there and keep it simple and get it in the hands of the forwards, because they're the guys that make things happen out there. So keep it simple, stupid, as always, and just move the puck up to the forwards. Seems like a pretty simple plan.
With Jeff O'Neill from TSN 1050 in Toronto, what kind of hockey do you think we're going to see overall? I mean, we've never been in the position we're in now where nobody's played for 4.5 months or so, and you're going right into the playoffs, right into do or die right away. So what kind of hockey do you think we're going to see?
I think it's going to be good. I think we're in an era where these guys are just, I mean, when Simmer and myself was playing, it's like we needed August to kind of to ramp the situation up, and come September training camp, we would be ready to go. But I think these guys, it's just more of a, it's more emphasis on being ready to go 12 months a year. The training and the diet and the nutrition, they're just, it seems like they just need 2 weeks of practice and one preseason game or scrimmage, whatever you want to call it. And I think they're going to be ready to go. And I think once you add the intensity of, okay, this is for real now, I just think they're going to be ready to go, and it's going to be good hockey. Some of the scrimmages, games, exhibition games, they've been a little bit sloppy. They've been a little bit careless. But I think in this situation, guys will be able to flip the switch and be ready to go. Sure, it's not going to be perfect. There might be some bad periods, some bad goals, goaltending. There might be some guys that are just mentally not really into it right now. But I think it's going to be pretty good.
Do you think there's an opportunity, O-Dog, that we could end up seeing up-tempo hockey in a short series, everybody's fired up, and then all of a sudden maybe hit a bit of a physical wall in the true round number one?
Yeah, I think you see that in all playoffs. Like, you always see the, you know, round one, there's awesome hockey, and you know, there's an upset or two, and then round two, it's kind of similar, and then maybe the conference final, things kind of go into a bit of a grind, so I think every year, Simmer, that's a situation that generally happens, so I don't think it'll be any different this year. And who knows, like, they're going to be excited, as I talked about, hockey's been off for so long. Who knows how long they can keep that adrenaline up, so there might be a tail off, but the mentality of the players has got to be, this is different, this is a situation that might not be optimum for all the guys to be in a bubble, to be in a hotel, but let's just grind it out. If you're one of those quality teams that have a chance, I don't think they care about the asterisk. People talk about, oh, is it really a Stanley Cup? Yeah, it is. You get a replica of the cup and you get a ring, and I don't think anyone's good. There's not going to be any COVID on the ring or the little replica trophy. So just grind it out for 2 months and give yourself the best chance.
Yeah. If you're one of the top four teams, that they'll play this three-game round robin for seeding, but really at the end of the day, you know you're going to be on to the important games after that. Are you really gunning to try to get the first spot when there's no, at the end of the day, not really a home ice advantage, or are you just playing to kind of get yourself ready to go to make sure you know, round one of the playoffs, game one is your best game?
I think they're just going to be thinking. I don't know how much pressure or emphasis they're going to be putting on it, because as you said, it's all in the same barns. So let's just get fine tuned here, get ready to go, and they all got to ultimately face each other sooner or later anyway. So let's just see where we're at. And if you win it, that's great. And if not, let's just see who we got and let's get after it.
I think of all the teams, O-Dog, going into it, everyone seemed to have the dark horses, the New York Rangers. Is there a team, and, you know, going up against your old Carolina Hurricanes, is there a team you're looking at out of the 24 that you think might be a sleeper?
One of my buddies, I had a little golf weekend with my buddies, and one of my buddies kind of, I'm kind of surprised he had to talk to me. He liked the Canes. He said he really thinks if the goaltending can hold up, they got some great talented young players, and I think they could, do some Caniac type things. You know, the more he kept talking in the golf cart, I was like, I'm just not buying this. I'm not buying this. And then about the 13th hole, I'm like, you know what? This guy's been blabbing for 3.5 hours. Maybe I actually, it's like a salesman. He just talked me around. I'm like, you know what? Maybe the Canes are pretty good and they could do some damage. It was the ultimate sell job. So as soon as I walked off the golf course, I'm like, man, I really like the Canes right now. I'm like, what are you, like a shrink or something? I'm like, I was all in on the Canes after I left the golf round. So maybe Carolina can do something special.
Yeah. We were debating earlier this morning whether Simmer thinks that Tampa Bay is under huge, huge pressure to win this year. And I kind of look at it and go, this is such a crazy year. I don't know if the pressure is any worse than any other year. Where do you come down on where the Lightning are at in terms of the importance of winning this year in particular?
I know what they did win the championship back with LeCavalier and that group, but they're kind of, you know, they've got to get it going or they're going to be morphing into kind of San Jose-type territory back in the day where everyone had them as favorites every year. It's like San Jose, San Jose, San Jose, and it was first-round exit. Not making it or second round exit, and they just couldn't get the job done. So I think for Tampa, after that disappointing loss, I think Coop was under the gun at the beginning of the season, and they ultimately turned it around. But they're just under pressure. They accumulate a lot of points. They've got a lot of talent. And they've got to win sooner or later.
All right. So when it comes to Saturday, does HGTV rule the day as far as the audio goes at the O'Neill family homestead or what?
I will be informing my wife the TV is off limits. It will be all mine all day long.
Okay. All right. What's your over-under and the number of hours you'll be watching on Saturday?
I'll be fully tuned in for everything. I'm committed to night and day. I got a little workout in the morning, and then I'm watching TV.
All right. 13 hours. We'll mark you down. We'll reconvene and see if that's the actual fact. Hey, listen, really appreciate the time and the insight. Look forward to watching your coverage on SportsCenter. And thanks again. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, boys. Thanks a lot.
All right. There's Jeff O'Neill from TSN 1050 in Toronto on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. All right. We'll take a break. 9:29. Thoughts on what Jeff O'Neill had to say? You can text us at 12-1200. You can tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll come back. We'll talk about Nate Pearson's great debut, more on the hockey from last night, and a look ahead to today, and much more. And this day in sports history, some sports birthdays as well, all straight ahead on TSN 1200. Simmer that tweaked you?
Well, they said on the broadcast the other day that Anderson looked heavy, so I ran with that bad boy. Now he's saying that he's
fine.
I don't know if he's taking breaks. You know, to the Leafs and just everybody in that market, and they get excited, they get hyped up. I like their forward group, but I really do. This idea that all of a sudden, can they buy in defensively, tactically against a team like Columbus? Yeah, can they end up doing it? And as far as a window, I understand the Ovechkin stuff, and you know, you get into some of those. But the Leafs have put themselves in a terrible spot where, first of all, they're not built to win a Stanley Cup, so forget about that part of it. But by the time Barry and CeCe go out and you kind of rebuild and figure out what money you have to shed, yeah, I think they put themselves in a tough spot. And to your point on Anderson, he to me is one more playoff failure away from, you're going to have to figure out if there's somebody else that can come in and do it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? And even if he wins a series or two or three, I mean, if they win the Stanley Cup, totally different thing. But Freddie Anderson is what now, 32, I believe, somewhere in and about there. With his contract coming up, and you know that he's going to want to hit one more payday.
Yeah.
And obviously, if he's coming off a Stanley Cup win, he's going to get paid.
Yeah.
But if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, unless it is a Stanley Cup championship, you know, you got to be looking at it and go, we can't commit 4 and 5 years to at that point, what, 33 or 34-year-old goaltender.
Yeah, no, it'd be hard.
Especially with the cap problems we already have.
No, for sure, and this is, again, finally at the deadline, they were able to solve their backup situation. Campbell came in, but he's also one of those guys. It's great in the room and great to give you 20 games, and if it's anything more than that, you've got yourself in some big trouble. I don't think internally, at least I don't know of anybody that's necessarily a stud coming through the system. They have worked as hard as they can to find free agents, to bring different players in. But yeah, I like I said, just you go back to last year, even in having to flip out Marlowe for a pick, you know, to shed the Zaitsev contract and to bring in CeCe back in, to want to get rid of Kadri. Barry's been nothing but a disaster. They've just had a number of moves that have not made any sense, along with some of the worst contracts in hockey. When you look at what would happen with Marner, we look at what happened with Nylander, and you look at what they did with Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Like Austin Matthews might be, if I want to say what a window is, Here's a guy that, by the way they gave him, paid him, and kind of the way he carries himself, I'm not going to say shocked, but if you ask me, do I think at the end of this contract, is he going to still be in Toronto? I'd say no way.
Well, they walked him right to free agency, right?
Exactly.
The contract they gave him the max dollars they needed to, and they also gave him the term that he would want because he's going to hit free agency at 27.
Yeah, right? and
so he didn't lock him up for 8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And he also got the money he wanted. I mean, it's a perfect contract for him.
Well, yeah, and so when that contract ends, where's Johnny Tavares' game going to be at? And then you look at the rest of the supporting cast. That would no longer be the foundation. Now, the guy that I absolutely love is Morgan Rielly, and he certainly looks more like the Morgan Rielly from a year ago that had 72 points. He played too much early in the season. He didn't have a capable partner like Ron Hainsey. They overplayed him. He was playing injured. He's certainly a nice piece, but he's another guy. I mean, he's probably going to double his salary in his next contract.
So did you see the story of the latest on the John Chayka story that came from ESPN?
As far as New Jersey?
Yeah, exactly. ESPN reporting that it was the ownership with the New Jersey Devils that actually made the overture to former Arizona Coyotes GM John Chayka during the COVID shutdown. Now, they own not only the Devils, but the Philadelphia 76ers of the NBA, Crystal Palace of the EPL, and they're also in the running to buy the New York Mets as well. So we're talking about an ownership group that could have potentially, if they get the Mets, professional teams in four different sports. And they were looking at John Chayka not necessarily on the hockey side of things, but in terms of an overarching role with all of those teams.
Yeah.
When Gary Bettman, and apparently Gary Bettman is going to have to make a ruling because Arizona wants to hold him to the fact that he can't go to another NHL team.
Yeah.
Do you think at the end of the day, Gary Bettman looks at the position that maybe is being offered here and he will allow Chayka to go? Or is he going to, you know, make him kind of serve out, I guess, the rest of his time that he has contracted to Arizona?
Two parts. Did Arizona accept his resignation, which it sounded like they did? Well, if you accepted his resignation, then you've got nothing. The legal say, whatever, it's your problem. If he's going into, and I don't care if he's running one or 100 teams, if he's involved analytically on any level in helping to run the New Jersey Devils, then absolutely not. But boy, from what he's coming from and knowing his background, and you've talked about New Jersey, how heavily involved they are with these other teams, what an exciting position that would be for him, right? So I can understand the intrigue, but those would be my two philosophies right off the hop. If it's hockey ops, but I just wonder if you're Arizona, okay, well, then I'm going to sit home and you're going to have to pay me.
Yeah. Yeah, and technically, I think he terminated his contract.
Well, but
right?
There'd have to be an acceptance of termination. Otherwise, you know, technically, I maybe he'll stop you from depositing a huge amount of money into his account every 2 weeks.
Yeah,
right? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one or the other. Like when you resign, there's an acceptance of resignation, which frees both parties. If there's not an acceptance, then you would end up going to an arbitration. Now, they would have also been aware of this situation. That this is really, I can't think of a situation. Because if he was truly going to one of those or that job where you just said, you know what, he's going there from a business perspective, he's going to run all the business side, not be involved in any of the actual sports, I can get a bit of an argument that's a bump up. But I would look at this and think this must have been this guy's dream to go and kind of run all of the analytics departments for these four different franchises.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A couple of texts at 12-1200. Greg writes, hey guys, great show this morning. Do the players' points in the play-in rounds count toward their career points? How does that work? That comes from Greg. Well, we found out initially the NHL did not consider the play-in games to be playoff games, but then they said a few weeks later, oh, by the way, the stats from the play-in rounds, they'll consider to be playoff points.
Yeah.
So in terms of your career points, what you'll see in your hockey database, they usually separate out regular season from playoffs.
Yeah.
So the points in the play-in rounds will technically be under playoff points, not regular season points.
And JR, I don't have any problem with this. And I know people want to pick this apart now and say, and they want to go back to their argument about, that's why it's playoffs. Listen, you had to end the season. You've eliminated seven of your teams. Seven teams are going home and these players aren't accruing any points. What else am I going to do with the points? Just pretend that they're not there or create a third section in hockey database for play-in games? You had to make a decision on the fly here as to what you're going to do. And there's also not a counterbalance because in the play-in series for eight of the teams that are going home, between three and five of those games are against the same opponent. So I don't have any issue with the allocation that the National Hockey League, there was no other slot to put them in, right?
Right. Well, they kind of made their own bed by initially saying they weren't going to be playoff games, right? And then they kind of changed their tune. I think that's more of the issue than anything. I understand what you're saying, but why they said one thing and then kind of reverse course in a roundabout way and said the other thing later on. I think that's where you run into a
problem. It's hard. I'll just always keep going back to the Montreal Canadiens should not be invited to anybody's dance this year. They basically returned their prom dress and their tuxedo at the trade deadline. Now you've invited me and I'm naked.
Yeah.
And now you want me to pretend that this is playoffs?
Yeah. And you know what? I got a stain on the dress and my underarm deodorant kind of got there a little bit. Robert Barron writes, on the Florida Marlins possibly going out in Atlanta, and if that's where they contracted the COVID virus, it's another example of how these guys want to be treated like adults but can't act like adults responsibly. That comes from the Robert Barron.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's professional sports. Things will end up happening. Did I think there would be so much irresponsibility right off the hop? You would have to ask yourself what a rudderless ship that the Miami Marlins are right now, JR. Mm. And that does.
Derek Jeter has abdicated leadership with the Marlins.
Yeah, and you've also said that the standard of any organization, this isn't sports related, this is business, the tone is set from the top, right? And I'm not going to say that they're like the major league movie mentality, but there has to be a bit of a feeling. First of all, most of these guys probably shouldn't be playing in MLB. They wouldn't be there if they didn't cut all the salary. Like how your group perception is, you know, and how they handle themselves, because a lot of this does end up being, especially for these guys, they're not in a bubble necessarily. There has to be a lot of internal responsibility and leadership that they're missing.
Sens and Islanders first pick. We were talking about that earlier this morning. Of course, if the Islanders lose in the first round and win the draft lottery, then the pick rolls over that the Sens own, rolls over to next season.
Yeah.
Unsigned writes, might the Sens trade the number one pick back to the Islanders for a defenseman due to New York's cap issues? That comes from Unsigned. Well, if there was a defenseman you saw on the Islanders that you thought was worth a number one pick, maybe. I kind of looked down the list and, well, other than Noah Dobson, who's a great prospect, I don't think there's anybody else that you're giving up a number one pick to, especially a potential lottery pick next year.
No, and that's an area where they've done a pretty good job on the go. Now, Adin Pajot, you've had Barzal. Their forward group is actually in decent shape. That back end, that's why the team defense, the coaching, and a two-headed monster in goal the last couple of years has made this a successful team. That's got to be a big question mark for them going forward.
Couple of football notes. Damian Williams, who ended up being the starting running back for the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl, he announced last night he is opting out of the 2020 football season, so he becomes the second Chiefs starter to announce that they're going to sit out the coming year. Of course, the Chiefs drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire, the running back from LSU, in the first round, and you know, wanted to bring him in. You'd want to ease him in. He's really a good pass catcher out of the backfield.
Yeah.
He'll have to take on more of a role. So they do have a backup plan in place, but that is such a well-run machine, that offense in Kansas City. I don't want to say they'll move on without missing a beat with Damian Williams sitting out. You never want to lose a guy who, he performs, two touchdowns in the Super Bowl. He was great in the Super Bowl. It will be a miss, but they always seem to be able to find a way.
Well, and did they miss much with Kareem Hunt getting kicked out? Hey, think about that. That opening night we watched him. He's the fellow that fumbled against the Pats, right? And then went on to have the big game.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't think it's always interchangeable, but in the case of the weapons they have and a quarterback that just, hey, plays it any way he likes it, I'd actually be more concerned if I was him that someone's going to come in and take my job.
Yep. We mentioned last week that Henry Burris has a job in the NFL during Bears training camp. Another former Ottawa quarterback has just announced that he, too, is getting a job in the National Football League, although Hanks is just kind of a try it and let's see if it works from both sides. This one, I think, is a full-time job. Kerry Joseph, the former quarterback of the Ottawa Renegades, has been hired as an offensive assistant with the Seattle Seahawks. So he's going to be the assistant running backs coach. He's going to be involved in everything from quality control, which basically means anything they ask you to do, to helping out from an assistant coach's point of view with the running backs. He said he was been looking forward to working with Pete Carroll. Ultimately, I'd like to be an offensive coordinator in the National Football League. He coached in the NCAA last year. But there you go. Kerry Joseph with the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, and so smart. Anybody transitioning, we see the size of these NFL staffs and how often does somebody go from special teams or a lesser to be an offensive coordinator. Great opportunity and great opportunity for Hank. I mean, a thrill for anyone. You work so hard and timing to try to get involved in professional sports. Smart to take any opportunity you can get.
All right, 9:47, we'll take a break. When we come back, some other things that happened on this day in sports history, in addition to Sidney Crosby being picked number one overall by the Penguins right here in Ottawa. We'll look at some other things, including some great English soccer memories from this very day. So we'll get into that. We'll celebrate some sports birthdays as well before we turn things over to the boys from In the Box coming up after 10. 2 o'clock this afternoon, Ian and Lee are on the drive. And then tonight, it's a basketball doubleheader. We've got the Blackjacks still looking for their first win. They're taking on undefeated Fraser Valley at 7. And then as soon as that game's over, we're taking you to Orlando and with the resumption of the NBA regular season. And what a great matchup. Lakers and Clippers will kick it off tonight. And you'll hear it right here on TSN 1200. Unveiled the top 100 players in the NFL as voted by their peers, all right, so fellow players. And topping the list was Lamar Jackson, the unanimous choice as league MVP last year. We ask you, if you could pick one player for one season to win the Super Bowl, who would you choose? So we're taking out of it, hey, the youngest, you know, you're picking a guy because you're building for the future, or you're, or there's no salary cap implications or whatever.
Yeah.
You're just picking the one player you'd want to pick that you'd have for the entire season to try to win the Super Bowl. And we gave you the top six that are on the list as voted by NFL players. So that's Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Aaron Donald, Patrick Mahomes, Michael Thomas, and Christian McCaffrey. So we got three quarterbacks, we got a running back, we got a receiver, and we got a dominant defensive tackle. Six players on the list. You and Bunda, Simmer, this morning already voted for Lamar Jackson.
No.
Or Patrick Mahomes,
Patrick
sorry.
Mahomes. Yeah. And also a write-in. Got a text from Lever Sage on Dak Prescott.
Dak Prescott.
Yeah. We're going to axe that one.
Yeah. I voted Russell Wilson. So we'd love your thoughts at tsn1200.ca. One player for one season to win the Super Bowl. Who would you choose? All right. 9:52. Let's look at this day in sports history, shall we, for this July the 30th. And it was on this day, if you're an English soccer fan, you're probably not old enough to remember, because if you don't remember anything until you're at least 8 years old, that means you were born in 1958, which means you are well into your 60s. To remember England winning its one and only World Cup. It happened on home soil at Wembley Stadium. Let's take you to an old-timey clip. 2-2 versus West Germany in extra time.
Then Jeff Hurst, cool and collected, had the ball in the net. It bounced out. Goal claimed England. No goal protested the Germans. The referee consulted the linesman who'd been in line with the posts. And goal it was.
Yes, goal it was for the 3-2 lead for England. They would Jeff Hurst would add another for the hat trick. 4-2. England wins its one and only World Cup. I tell you what, I watched that highlight again.
Yeah.
There's no way that ball crossed. It was one of those ones where it hits the underside of the crossbar, goes straight down. And they don't have the goal line technology like they do now. And even that, they still screw up. But that didn't even look close to being over the line.
Was the winning in 66, JR, which led to basically 40 years of denial as to where they're at? No, I mean that sincerely, right? Where they thought they invented the sport. They were better than anybody else. Where it feels like in the last, 10 years, they've adapted and changed to maybe a more athletic squad.
The problem, I think, has been, and I was thinking about this last night, about how to make the equivalent for hockey in Canada, which is our number one sport. But think about this. The English Premier League is arguably the greatest league in the world. Maybe you think it's La Liga or whatever. But they insist on bringing, because, you know, English soccer fans want to see the best, so they bring in the best players from around the world. Well, what does that do? That shoves down your you know, the development of your domestics. Right? And if you want to develop your domestic players, you have to give them an opportunity to play and you know, and get better.
Yeah, and you certainly could say that here in Canada, you know, hey, but there's also the option for the other 24 teams in the United States, so nobody's really held back.
Yeah, we don't have a national hockey league just in Canada,
exactly,
is the point,
exactly.
Right? So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, no, it's hard. That's always kind of the development program and where you're going to play, how you're going to go about it, but boy, they sure love the system.
Yeah, on this day in 1982, the Pittsburgh Penguins signed an unheralded free agent by the name of Marty McSorley. Boy, did he carve out a nice career for a guy who was signed as a free agent.
Yeah, early on they had the crazy with Warren Young, who got a big contract. But I remember people telling stories about Marty coming in, playing in Baltimore, I think, in the American Hockey League, and would come to practice, JR, would pack a lunch, would have the old lunch and would go back and work at it. They just said he was a god-awful player. And as you said, turned into a nice career and one of the greatest heavyweight fighters of all time.
Absolutely. On this day in 1998, Kevin Lowe, six-time Stanley Cup winner, retired after 19 seasons as a player. He was immediately named an assistant coach with the Oilers. Of course, went on to become the head coach, the general manager, then the president of hockey ops. Then he got shuffled off to the business side of things. And, of course, was just elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame this past
year.
Yeah,
and one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. Certainly the right place at the right time. Anyway, slice it. Not a chance he should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame, but a real classy guy and was a nice part of, I don't even want to say a glue guy, but he was a nice part of some championship teams, including probably where he was needed the most as a leader was the 1994 New York Rangers.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting? So Kevin Lowe retires on this day in 1998, exactly 20 years later to the day, July 30th, 2018, Jerome Iginla announced his retirement from the National Hockey League. And of course, he got voted into the Hall of Fame as well this year with Kevin Lowe. So I don't need to go over Jerome Iginla's career stats. They are unbelievable. And of course, his number 12 was retired by the Flames this past season.
Yeah, the best of the best.
All right, sports birthdays. Bud Selig, born on this day in 1934. Of course, was the MLB commissioner from 1996 to 2015. He turns, well, that'd be 66, 86 years old.
86 years old,
right?
Wow. Did he take over for Bart Giamatti when he died?
No.
Okay.
No.
Rationale
no.
to have yeah. an owner as a commissioner, though? Was it, the thought process, was it not, that this would be short-term, wasn't it?
Faye Vincent would.
Faye Vincent. Okay, okay.
The name, yeah.
Yeah, so but it wasn't the idea that he would do this for, what, 19 years, was it?
No, I don't think so.
No. And he seemed like a nice fella.
Yeah.
Just wrong place at the wrong time.
Never really, kind of doesn't really, the look doesn't cut it as a sports commissioner. I don't know what it was, but kind of the ill-fitting glasses and kind of didn't really dress the part.
Looks not like that a really Yale grad. Graduate and a real nice fellow.
Born on this day, 1954, Ellis Valentine, the former Expos outfielder, 7 years with the Expos, was traded to the Mets in 81 for Jeff Reardon, made one All-Star game, one Gold Glove. Man, did he have a cannon for an arm. That's what I remember about Ellis Valentine in right field for the Expos.
Yeah, and just the formation of some of those really good Expos teams. And one of those classic Expos names.
Turning 57 today, Chris Mullen. Played 13 years with Golden State, 3 years with the Pacers, 7th overall pick in the 85 draft. That was the same draft in which Patrick Ewing went number one overall, won Olympic gold in 92 as part of the Dream Team. Yeah. And I remember him from his college days.
St. John's. Oh,
yeah.
Unbelievable. And the formation of the Big East, right? You knew all the coaches. You knew all the names. Syracuse had the great programs. Georgetown, Providence, Villanova. And all the marketing that's done behind the scenes here to generate the interest in it. And what I think is he's a New York boy, is he not? Like, he also is one of the kids. Like, he is just a, you want to talk about legendary basketball players? He's on a short list.
Graham McDowell turns 41. Justin Rose turns 40 today. Both of them won U.S. Opens. Graham McDowell in 2010, Justin Rose in 2013. And U.S. soccer goalie Hope Solo. Remember her? Also, she turns 39 years old today. Hockey birthdays. Happy birthday to, well, we'll see if he's a former or a current Ottawa Senator. Scott Sabourin turns 28 today.
Yeah.
He is an unrestricted free agent. What do you think? Is he back with the team next year or not?
No. There's no room for that. Would they offer him something maybe to ride shotgun for the boys down in Belleville? I think that's a possibility. But I don't think you'd have that. You know, there's so many players coming through the system. And sadly, at the end of the day, after running into Chara, wasn't all that effective in the fighting department. Hey, there's just not much fighting nowadays anyway.
Dylan Larkin turns 24 today. He's just completed his fifth season with Detroit. Do you feel like he's kind of turning the corner?
No, actually. I was going to say, would you not deem him to be underachieving?
Well, 73 points last year, 53 this year on a last place team.
Yeah, no, that's not bad. Just some of the maturity, and he had that one comment about the All-Star game. The preference, if they asked me, I'd rather go on vacation. I don't think that's the leadership or the next captain, but what a talent. And I guess there was just so much hype and expectation coming out of the University of Michigan.
Real Cluche turned 64 today. He was the top point getter two times in the old WHA, including in its final season in which he scored 75 goals and had 129 points. Went on to play with Quebec and Buffalo in the NHL, 344 points in 313 games.
Those WHA points were with the Nordiques, were they not?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Terrific hockey player. Yeah. Harold Ballard was born on this day in 1903. We don't need to document crazy Harold Ballard's hijinks. And we'll quickly do our birthday boy today, who's turning 47. Was a mid-first-round pick in the 91 draft. His career didn't take off until he was traded in the 95-96 season to a team he would play 12 seasons with.
Oh, man.
One season over 100 points, a year in which he finished second in the Hart Trophy voting, but won the Pearson Award, as it was known back then, as voted the best player by his peers. Was a three-time first-team All-Star at left wing, while scoring 40-plus goals in each of those seasons.
Hope I have it.
Ended his career on Broadway.
Yeah, okay.
All right, you got it? Yeah. And it is?
Adam Graves?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, okay.
Marcus Naslund.
Oh, wow.
395 career goals, 346 with the Vancouver Canucks, and of course was drafted by Pittsburgh in one of the all-time steals, right?
Alex
for
Stoyanov.
Alex Stoyanov, one for one.
But I'll tell you what, when he came over, and that might have been part of it, the hype was there. I mean, he was coming in, he was on the same age as Forsberg, is he not? Like, this was another one of those next Jager. Never worked out, and that formation for Vancouver to not have any first line and suddenly get Morrison in a trade from New Jersey and get Bertuzzi, and what a treat they were.
Well,
to watch.
That line was the best line in hockey for a couple of years.
At least regular season.
True. Unstoppable. Yeah, yeah.